If you're wondering how to navigate government or grow your business or even secure funding for your nonprofit, then this is the podcast for you. Here on Lobbying Insider, we take a look at the intersection between business and government and show how things actually get done. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Welcome to the program. And we are joined today by two guests. The topic is Ukraine. Can you both introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Myron Rabi, partner here at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, doing corporate law currently, but a longtime Ukraine specialist with 22 years of in-country experience, particularly practicing law, focusing on energy, mineral rights, and real estate and corporate issues.
Hi, I'm Jed Sundin. I'm the founder and the director of the America-Ukraine PAC. We're a political action committee which works to build support for the American-Ukraine relationship in Washington, D.C. Previously, I was the founder of the Kiev Post in Ukraine and built the largest consumer internet company in Ukraine.
Interesting. Okay, Jed, tell us just a little bit about the PAC and what kind of activity it has, and has that increased as we've seen a change in the administration?
Well, sure. Obviously, as a result of the tragic events and the full-scale invasion in 2022, all Ukrainian supporters are much more focused on Washington, D.C. and the American-Ukraine relationship. When the supplemental, which was the supplemental funding bill last year, there was a delay in the passage, and then we set up the PAC to really allow, you know, to try and work more actively to build political support for Ukraine. In the last cycle, we got involved in about 22 races, mainly in the House, bipartisan. So we worked with both parties and really tried to reach out to the Ukraine champions, those members of Congress who really took a lead in the America-Ukraine relationship.
And it is bipartisan? I mean, you find that really on both sides of the aisle, they are friends?
Yep. It's bipartisan, and a majority of congressmen in both parties support Ukraine. Majority of Americans in both parties support Ukraine.
So that, I would imagine, makes it a little bit easier when you're asking for donations. I mean, people, I would imagine, were sort of very much engaged in the issue when you started out with this.
Sure. Donations are always hard. Donations for any organization are hard. And obviously, everybody who's around Ukraine over the past couple of years, there's a lot of need, and there's a lot of great projects, humanitarian and helping people get out and sending drones in. And this is another one. I think it's important. I think the value that we can create is great and, you know, does a lot to help Ukraine win the war and to deepen the relationship. But donations are always hard.
Well, I think you should raise, when we got involved in this, because our law firm's been helping and supporting the action committee. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring Jed here. I've also known Jed since our time in Ukraine together. So I know him as a businessman and publicist and head of a media empire, which you seem to not emphasize enough, and extremely well connected in Ukraine. What I think was important and that got me intrigued and involved with the PAC was what you have been pitching and telling focal group, Ukrainian American groups, in that you have you're not a lobbyist, you have a different aspect to what you're doing and how the money that you raise is applied. Because I remember you spent a lot of time educating people about the PAC, because although there's tons of support groups on Ukraine in the United States, this is the only Ukrainian American PAC, period. Nobody else has done this. There's lobby groups in Washington, but nobody has been focused solely on raising money for politicians. People have been doing it slapdash, where, you know, all of us get together and say, we know the congressman and we're going to send the money. But to funnel it and channel it through a PAC has been a novelty that a lot of people, it's taken a while for people to understand in the Ukrainian American group of people who have been focusing on how to apply money and how to get the most bang for their buck. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things you said that I liked, where you can say we can raise money and buy a drone, or we can focus congressional support to get billions of dollars of American funding for the Ukrainian military or for humanitarian organizations and for humanitarian support. So if your dollar contributed to a PAC may go a lot further than your dollar contributed to buy a particular drone or medical apparatus.
Yeah. First, as you mentioned, there are, you know, a lot of good groups or what you're doing, the advocacy, bringing voters to D.C. and obviously Ukraine supporters or active voters. And, you know, but this is giving it's another way to build a political coalition. And like everything, right, we all vote locally. We're in New York. We have our New York. Political power in America is dispersed, right? Speaker of the House from Louisiana. Head of Armed Services is from Mississippi, right, et cetera, right? And to build coalitions and to get legislation passed, you need to work with members on both sides of the aisles and members across the country. And the PAC is a good vehicle to do that, more so than the advocacy organizations where, you know, Ukrainian Americans or a lot of Ukrainians, they're concentrated in certain states, New York, New Jersey, California, which is great, but political power is in all 50.
There was certainly some concern that the United States policy towards the region changed with the new administration. Has that increased interest in your PAC?
There was really a lot of news about Ukraine. U.S. policy hasn't really changed, right? The U.S. has supported. We've been sending weapons. We were sending weapons under the Biden administration. We're sending weapons under the Trump administration. Now, there's a lot of rhetoric going on and talk. And without a doubt, Trump and the Trump administration highlighted and, you know, were presenting a different view and putting an emphasis on a resolution to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, right? But policy, formal policy, hasn't changed. And I think we can say every Ukrainian would love to see peace, would love to see a ceasefire. Right? There are rockets landing in Kyiv, rockets landing across Ukraine every day. So any step to get a ceasefire, even a one-month ceasefire, is a great first step. And we're thankful that the Trump administration has been putting efforts into that. And, you know, we're all hoping that we'll see them come to fruition.
Well, certainly right, a new direction. And you can certainly make the point that for many years, not much progress was being made, right? I mean, at least now there seems to be at least a dialogue. Whether, you know, how effective it's going to be, I guess, remains to be seen. But it does seem to be a different approach in terms of who's talking to who and trying to get all parties to come to the table for this ceasefire, which has remained elusive, but that's what everybody wants.
Sure. It's a new approach. And you can say, additionally, within Congress, now you have a Republican-led Congress, there's also a new approach. There's some very good legislation led out of the Republican Senate for much harder sanctions on Russia.
It's Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, the Lindsey Graham bill. Actually, it's a bipartisan bill. It's a Graham and Blumenthal. So it's bipartisan, a Democrat-Republican sponsor. There were 64.
But Republicans have the power, so.
It's not a Republican-led. My point is it's a Democrat and Republican jointly-led bill. There are 64 co-sponsors, 32 from each party, and it does look like there is momentum in the House and, you know, it should go. So a new approach in the administration, a new approach in Congress, both of which I think are positive steps.
I want to talk about business opportunities in Ukraine and whether or not that is going to open up. Or do they exist currently, or does there need to be some kind of resolution to the conflict before people can really take a hard look at that?
It's hard in terms of there's business opportunities for Ukrainians. They live, eat, survive. There's a lot of European investment, particularly into Western Ukraine. There's very little new American investment other than sustaining projects that have been ongoing. Trump administration says, okay, we do the mineral deal and we're going to have all these sort of American commercial boots on the ground, but there's American businesses in Ukraine now. So they're still there. You know, Coca-Cola is still there. They have a plant. There's lots of startups and things that are moving around in Ukraine, and they've been there. There's the American Chamber of Commerce in Ukraine, which is a large commercial lobby group together with a European counterpart. In terms of business that's there, that's being sustained. New business currently, unless it's been involved in military tech or dual-purpose tech, has been basically non-existent. And part of the reason is political risk, because there's only two entities in Ukraine that offer political risk insurance. And one of them is going to be the American counterparty in the Mineral Rights Agreement, which is interesting. But until there's a sustainable peace, I don't think there's much to do.
Okay.
Because the rebuilding will start, and that's when people want to invest. But until bombs start falling and stop falling, nobody's going to start building brick and mortar shops. It's just not going to happen.
That makes sense. And I guess that brings me to this mineral deal. There was an announcement. The Trump administration had been trying to get Ukraine to sign over these rights. Tell me if you could just the details of all of that, because I saw some press coverage of it, but I'm not sure everyone totally understands exactly what it is.
First, the mineral deal and the focus on the business opportunities is also an example of a new approach that the Trump administration has taken. He's putting more emphasis on this. And as Mehron said, obviously, while the war and the bombing of the Russians continued, right, it's hard to think of economic investment. And part of the emphasis on the ceasefire and then the economic opportunities, you know, is part of that new focus of the Trump administration. And, right, the mineral deal, obviously, there was a bunch of noise about it. There was the deal that was signed yesterday, and everybody's still, you know, reading and, you know, fully forming opinions, but it does seem like it's a great opportunity for deepening of the American-Ukrainian relationship. It's opportunities for American companies to invest. It ensures that Ukraine has a great open playing field and investment environment for American companies. So it does look like a good agreement for both sides.
But what is the agreement?
Well, I agree with Jed, it's a great opportunity. But firstly, the agreement is actually a Ukrainian brainchild that the Ukrainian government brought to the Biden administration back last fall or last spring.
Okay.
And the Biden administration didn't do a darn thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a thought project. And once the Trump administration came into town, the Ukrainians seized on the opportunity and said, look, we got a great idea here. And the Trump administration said, yeah, we actually do, and engaged with the Ukrainians to come up with this. The agreement itself that was signed yesterday essentially is a framework agreement, and there is a limited partnership agreement that has the guts and the glory of the actual of what's going to be done that will need to be yet signed, negotiated, and documented. This particular agreement still needs to be approved by the Ukrainian parliament, which nobody expects that to be a problem, but technically it is almost like a treaty. You know, a bilateral agreement needs to be approved by the relevant branches. What it says is basically the U.S. and Ukraine establish an investment fund, which will be used to fund mineral rights and infrastructure projects in Ukraine. The American side to this will be the Development Finance Corporation, which is in D.C. That's previous OPIC. And they've been funding Ukrainian projects basically through loans, a little bit of equity, for years. So they have on-the-ground Ukraine experience. What they don't have is any mineral rights experience because they've never lent to energy projects, period. They've done infrastructure, but not energy. So this part of that will be new for them. They'll probably have to hire qualified staff. But in essence, there's a parallel Ukrainian organization on public-private partnership. The two of them get together, and whenever there's a private investor in Ukraine, doesn't say it has to be Americans, but if someone gets a license or a concession or a production sharing agreement, et cetera, and they need capital, they are obligated to turn to this investment fund, and the investment fund will review projects, and if it deems them worthy, will invest. And American money will come in, and whatever the Ukrainian government receives as income from the license agreements, from the concession agreements, from the production sharing agreements, it's supposed to take half of that and reinvest it back into the fund to allow for further investment. That's how this thing's structured.
Okay. And just a note to our listeners, we're taping in early May, and this is dropping in mid-May, so a couple of yesterday references. It's not literally yesterday. It was just recently when the agreement was signed. But more specifically, tell me about what minerals exist there. What are they unique for? What are their uses? Why is this so valuable?
Because the U.S. wants to escape the stranglehold that China has over the rare earths industry, because that's critical for computer chips, for all sorts of technology, for steel, for all sorts of electronic bits and pieces that and for computers that Americans have been used to import. And it is...
We don't have them here. They're not naturally occurring in continental United States. Okay.
No. And they do have some. There's a new field just shown that's, but you need more. And you need to break, if 80% of it's coming from China, that's not sustainable. And Ukraine does have these mineral resources. They're undeveloped. And Ukraine has been hollering for years, waving its hands, saying, here I am, take a look at this. And this happened even before the war started. And there have been investment projects back and forth. I was involved in a few. And some projects moved forward, some projects did not. There, Americans were involved, they weren't. Europeans were involved and they weren't. But the point is, it is available, but it will require massive investment to get this into...
To extract it.
To extract it, to develop it before anybody sees a dime.
Right. So this is a very good deal for America.
It's a very good deal for Ukraine and America down the road.
Okay.
I want to highlight, yes, it is. It's an economic deal, and it does sort of say for business opportunities, obviously for mining companies when you speak about, you know, rare earth metals. But for Americans writ large, it's a very important deal. As Miron said, it removes our American dependence on China. So for any American, even if they're not in the mining industry and they're not invested in the mining industry, they have nothing to do with it, it ensures that we are no longer dependent on China. And that is a win for American security writ large.
Without a question. And that is some of what seems to be trying to be undone now, which was just that there was so much interdependence, which, by the way, took decades, right? I mean, this didn't happen overnight. And now trying to unravel some of that is complicated. But it sounds like this deal is very much a move in that direction, where we have our own sources of some of these minerals, for example, to construct some of these devices.
Yes, yes.
I think it's positive, and it's actually interesting because a lot of American commercial efforts have always been short-term, and this is taking the long view. And we often hear that it's the Chinese that take the long view on investments and strategies. And this is actually the Trump administration taking a long view on economic security.
Do you think some of this mining can start right away? Or to your point earlier, Myron, is there a situation where we've got to have some kind of resolution to the war if companies are going to take that kind of risk?
Some things can start in Western Ukraine.
Okay.
And perhaps a little bit in Central Ukraine. But again, it's dependent on projects. So what we can anticipate is that now the Ukrainians have a chance to start lining up projects and showing first to the Americans, these are opportunities. Because you can look here, you can look here, you can look here, you can look here. This is what we can do. So right now, there's going to be a lot of time spent identifying opportunities and identifying projects. And then it'll be up to Americans to figure out which ones they want to actually pursue and follow. So it's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
It's an investment fund. Like any investment fund, it takes time to review a project, develop it, invest in it. And it'll be interesting to see once they come out with their agreement. I'm sure that part of the economic incentive to any fund is there's always an exit, right? We invest, we develop, and then we sell it for more money.
Right.
Right. So it's not simply monies received as concession revenues by the Ukrainian government reinvested in the thing. At some point, this investment fund will be selling off these assets. And that's where the big benefit is going to come to, say, the American people, because that's where the revenue is going to come in.
Right.
We've developed an asset, and all of a sudden, we've tripled our investment, the return on investment. That's what this, if it works like most investment funds, will be geared to do.
Just to follow up, clearly on these projects, it's not like you sign a deal and then tomorrow they go out with the pickaxes right, and
right,
going.
Right.
Right. But, when you say, is there stuff that can be done immediately? And again, I'm not in the mining business. I'm not there.
Sounds like you should get into it, though.
But what I can guess is I'm pretty sure that American mining companies have this on the desk, on their desk, and are looking at it and are looking at Ukraine and booking trips. And,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, I'm going to change careers. Yeah. I mean, that's,
there you go. And beginning, you know, the opportunity's there. There's a framework there. The Ukrainian government has said, we're ready to go. And, you know, there's guarantees around it. And, you know, people are now going to start doing the work. And
that would presumably open up floodgates to more investment.
Sure.
And right, within Ukraine, don't you think?
Sure.
Certainly, because most projects anywhere in the world, if you're going to do any sort of inbound mineral rights, there's always a local partner.
Right.
There's some local partner, some local specialist. There's going to be local people who are hired. So certainly the Ukrainian is going to lead, and they're all excited.
I would imagine the other effect, and again, I'm not deep on Ukrainian government and Ukrainian government mineral rights and legislation, but I would imagine now that this document is signed, there will be a lot of attention on, you know, the government bodies that control this, and in terms of streamlining entry and documentation and bidding, et cetera, for everything around this, right? Because they know there's a lot of attention on it. There is an opportunity to attract investment, and they're going to be doing everything they can to make sure the investment environment is as attractive as possible.
And it does certainly feel like, as long as this war has dragged on for, that there were some missed opportunities.
Sure,
sure. And Ukraine has a long history of missed opportunities, particularly in development, for many reasons. We've complained about corruption. We've complained about bureaucracy and arcane laws and confusion. And that's true. And as Jed says, this is a time for Ukrainians, if they want this to done, they have to streamline their processes. I was involved in a lot of tenders and a lot of mineral rights deals and a lot of energy deals in Ukraine over the years, and it was always slow and cumbersome. And sure, there was corruption involved, but much more so, just a huge bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And it just has to, for it to work, it has to be streamlined. And I think that will be good for Ukraine and Ukrainians generally, and for the business environment, because businesses coming in say, okay, we have an investor that can come in with us, but we have the pressure of the U.S. government stating, if you want us in, you got to make it work.
Right.
It's got to be investor friendly, and otherwise we're not going to look at that. And we are compelling you now to do that.
But it's tough to just sort of snap a finger and improve efficiency if there's a difficulty getting there previously.
Well, where there's a will, there's a way, right? I mean, this, look at what the Trump administration is doing. We're firing a lot of people because you're over redundant. And if we look at the Zelensky administration, when they came to power before the war, one of their main, you know, he came to power, he had two things he wanted to do: stop corruption and resolve the differences with Russia, because the war, the occupation of eastern Ukraine, had started back in 2014. And what two of his guiding principles before the war was, I want to make peace with Russia. Now he's doing it an entirely different way. And two, clean up the government, streamline it, because previous governments weren't efficient. He was starting to do that. And one of the things he did, and even the Poroshenko government beforehand it did, was, we're streamlining the government, we're simplifying it, we're letting off, we're letting off 20% of the administration because they're all redundant. So a lot of those things have been in the works and have been proceeding over the years. Obviously, you can't talk about accomplishments when in February 2022 a war started, but that was a trajectory that was already
underway. That was in motion. Yeah. Okay. Unfortunately, we do have to wrap it up there. I apologize. The time is up, but thank you both for being with us. That was a great episode.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and support the PAC.
Yes. Thank you.
The Lobbying Insider Podcast is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York State's premier middle market law firm, practicing in more than 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and government affairs. The podcast is produced by Don Tesserero, and our platform manager is Monica Thomas. Be sure to subscribe, and you can get it where you get most podcasts, including Apple, Audible, Google, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Thanks for being with us.